Reading fans could not be blamed for throwing in the towel on the club's bid to beat the drop after a demoralising defeat at Coventry was paired with nightmare results elsewhere, but not here at the Tireless Den podcast, with this week's show dedicated to the positive and telling you all why the Royals ain't done yet. Welcome to episode 336 of the show. I'm your host, Mark Mayer, as per usual, and we are going to try, with Ross Webber joining me this week, to have a positive show with two games left in the season. And Ross, we are still in the relegation zone.
We're still in the relegation zone, but we've still got a lot to play for. We're still scrapping, and it should be a good positive conversation today.
Definitely, definitely. There's a lot. We're in the realm of permutations now, which we'll be going through later on. We'll obviously be talking about the draw with Luton and the defeat to Coventry we've had since the last show, and looking ahead to that big old tasty, tasty game. Maybe not in the best way, but against Wigan on Saturday at 3 p.m. We'll also be having your mailbag questions and a little dip into the news bites to see what the other teams have been getting up to in the last week. Without further ado, then let's get into the recap with a quick nod to our sponsors, ZCD Films and the Patreon subscribers. Thank you very much to those guys.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right then, Ross, where we start with this one. I mean, Noel Hunt has installed a style of play that is different to Paul Lynn's 4-4-2.
Yeah.
We actually saw some faces back, Shane Long and Tom McIntyre, in the squad for Coventry, which I thought Paul Lynn's had ruled out for the season, but there we go. And it didn't quite work against Coventry. I think against Luton, maybe there was a bit more leeway because obviously Reading took the lead, had Andy Carroll sent off for the handball into the net. And then after, you know, from then on, it's just all the bets are off as to what's going to happen and everything. As for the Coventry game, just didn't feel like one that Reading got into. What did Noel Hunt maybe not get so right in this game?
I think that with this particular game, you know, while there may have been things that Noel Hunt didn't get right, I think this was one of the best performances that we saw from a home team while Reading are on the road this season, I think, especially from individuals. You know, Jokeres, Hamer were both a real issue for Reading. And contrary to it being necessarily something with Hunt's setup, although I will touch on that in a second, I think that just it's not often that we see Andy Yeardham getting beat one-on-one on the side. And Jokeres was able to do that a few times. And meanwhile, Hamer was able to just stride straight through the very open midfield that Reading have had for much of the season, honestly, without someone really to take advantage. I thought that got a little bit better when McIntyre came on in the second half, but yeah, just not really having a game plan to deal with those players. I think that he wants to worry about his own team's performance and then worrying about counseling out the opposition. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm unsure, but yeah, I think that while certainly the inclusion of Kamara in the starting lineup looked like it was going to be an exciting one, didn't really end up working out. And Coventry were just able to generate a lot of joy, you know, down that right wing that Kamara was covering on the defensive left, really keeping Guinness Walker penned in as well and limiting the amount of chances that he could throw in for Kelvinny or Lucas Jao. So I think that, you know, maybe some personnel mistakes, maybe it was a bit too much of a big game for Kamara to have to play. But yeah, I mean, I really think that both as a team performance and via the performance of a few individuals, Coventry just gave some of Reading's more regular performers more difficult games than they might have expected. So yeah, I think I saw some of that on Saturday.
Yeah, I think with Kamara, Noel Hunt himself saying it didn't quite go as well as he thought it was, maybe wasn't able to click into the pace of the championship game, which is not really a surprise given I think it's his first senior appearance of the season. Tyrese Fawner, he said, was basically shattered from the last couple of games as to why he didn't come in. And I guess you could have played Guinness Walker at left wing, put Mbenge in there. How do we think that he changed it to a 4-2-3-1? Shane Long also came on. What was the good part about that? Do we think this is something that we could be seeing more of from Noel Hunt?
I did quite enjoy seeing a 4-2-3-1. It feels like a return to something familiar, and also a return to a formation that can get something out of Lucas Schau. But funnily enough, I actually thought after Kelvin Ahead-Tillman came off, they were struggling to get the ball into Zhao's feet a little bit more. But that said, I did like having McIntyre in there as a blocker. I think that might be his best position there in the double pivot with Hendrick. It allowed Cassidy to push further forward, which for 5 or 10 minutes looked like it could be exciting. I like Cassidy playing in that 10 role. And McIntyre being in the center of the pitch, I just like that. Opens up much more for him in terms of passing angles. And you know, he can be limited somewhat in a defensive capacity, but from a passing standpoint, I think McIntyre's a really cultured player at this level. So getting him in the middle there, I liked that a lot. But getting people up and around Zhao in the at the top is going to be what's essential if they're going to try this again with Wigan. I'd be interested in seeing it for sure. I think that starting McIntyre and Hendrick as the double pivot, like I said, and then perhaps having Cassidy, maybe Fauna and Aziz in that three behind Zhao, you know, maybe that gives you enough people to get close to Zhao, get little touches for him and help him create the little bit of space that we saw him score with on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's certainly something that I'll be looking out for as well, where Shane Long maybe fits in this, because Nohan played with Shane Long as a footballer. He knows all about how to get the best out of Shane Long. I could maybe imagine something like Lucas Zhao playing just a bit off Shane Long. Shane Long needs balls in behind, and Zhao can pick up the pieces very easily and very nicely. So if Shane Long's fit for Wigan, I certainly expect to see him start.
I was really impressed with Lucas Zhao this weekend. Because when the lineup came out, obviously, Zhao is the senior figure in that group of attackers, and yet necessarily someone taking on a load of responsibility is not always something that I attribute to Lucas Zhao, and I wonder how much of that has been formed incorrectly in my head as an opinion by him being left out of Paul Ince's squad for so long. But I thought this is a really mature performance from Lucas Schau. He was dropping back into the midfield to try and link up play, get it out wide and things like that. He was making his usual little flicks and moves. And there's just a little bit of time in the lineup over the last few weeks seems to have really seen him improve pretty quickly. So good to see him taking on that responsibility to get the kids playing with him. And I thought he was really good on Saturday.
In terms of the relegation battle then, where Reading are at the moment, if anyone's not seen the table, I'll briefly walk you through it, because Reading are still in the relegation zone. 1 point off Huddersfield, 3 points off Cardiff. Both of those guys have a game extra to play, as do Rotherham. They're only 3 points above us as well. We'll go through some permutations later, but where are you kind of at with it? Because a lot of fans did very much say this is the game that sends us down and everything, and obviously, immediately after the game, there's a real sense of, whoa, QPR having somehow got a win at Burnley really didn't help. And it is there. I think there is a little bit of a sense that things aren't quite falling for us at the moment, particularly you think of Carlton Morris's goal for Luton, the way that ball pings up in the air and lands at the back post is, you know, that's unlucky. The way that QPR, who did get battered at Burnley, have got a win, for us, that's unlucky. And I can't think of much in the way of good luck that Reading have had recently. Is that something that has to change, basically, or are Reading maybe even due?
No, I think I see what you mean completely. I'm thinking back to previous relegation scraps, you know, maybe Mo Barrow's goal against Ipswich is one that's coming to mind, whereby the ball sort of bobbles right in front of him as it reaches him, but then he's able to corral it anyway and get it under control. So it's that moment, you know, maybe if the bounce goes slightly different, that never happens, and that'll be the luck running out that season. And we've ridden some we've had some moments like this in the last few years. Tom Ince's goal against Bournemouth last year, and the McIntyre goals from set pieces around Easter. You know, it does feel like we're lacking a moment like that yet. And whether that moment is an overall shellacking of Wigan at the weekend, or, you know, a late winner that comes through one of Jeff Hendricks' scheduled, every 3 months, just thunder goals from outside of the box, you know, in the last minute, that'd be great. I think that Noel Hunt's come in. He's clearly given the players a bit more license to express themselves on the field and attack, but there is still an element whereby you need to give them instructions that are going to help them get there. And I think that while the players know they're allowed to be further forward on the pitch now, they don't necessarily know what to do once they get up there still, unless their name is Lucas Zhao, in which case the answer is put it in the back of the net. So I think that, you know, these last couple games here where we need a moment, exactly like you're saying, to really get the blue touch paper going and try and keep this going until the last minute of game 46.
Well, let's hear from Noel Hunt now, and then we'll be back for the mailbag to talk a bit more from your questions.
We all know that there's two big games left. The boys understand that, and their relation to fights. You know, I'm wanting to come back in on Monday morning positive, and we go where we'll address this game, look at the things that we done really well, look at the things we could do better, and try and improve for the next one.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
So as always, put up the question for you guys on Twitter to have the mailbag. Let's start with Peter Martyr, who says, do you think it's now long past time for the owner to come out and confirm his position, as is likely we go down? Will he continue to support the club? If not, we are in massive trouble, huge debt and no assets. Now, I genuinely think this is the most important question of the entire, Reading era, basically, as to what happens if Reading go down. Because we can talk about the manager, we can talk about the players, Mark Bowen's role and all this sort of stuff. But if Dai Young, however much you think that he's not done a good job or whatever, Reading are beholden to him and his, loans to the club, everything that Peter's just said. So I completely agree. It is absolutely time.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, maybe not now, because for him to come out and say, yes, I'm staying if we go down in a relegation battle probably doesn't do too much. But if Reading do go down, the day after, there has to be something from Dai Young reaffirming his commitment, because I mean, I don't want to go too much into the ifs, buts and maybes are going down, but I genuinely think the biggest fear is turning into a club like Charlton, who you see massive ownership issues at, a club that just can't function off the pitch, basically. And with Dai Young, there is still a chance that Reading can function off the pitch. He has put in, to his credit, loads and loads of money, maybe too much, to make Reading function. And obviously it hasn't worked out, but I just think that he's absolutely right. Dai Young has to, if Reading go down, come out immediately and say that he's here, he's still committed.
Yeah, and I think that it's completely fair to say that, and it's fair to say that it's frustrating for Reading fans that they feel that they don't know the answer to that question already. You know, that should be something that their owner is speaking enough to make them at least aware of where he might be heading. Like, if he'd said before, if the club goes down to League One, I'll be on my way, then at least we would have some sort of answer as to what's going to happen there. Obviously, you hope that no news is good news, but no news is worrying news in a football landscape where you've seen clubs go out of business, clubs slide down the divisions. I remember, maybe a decade ago, you called it going down the Pompey Highway if you were falling through the divisions for ownership and financial reasons. So, yeah, I mean, it's fair for Reading fans to be concerned about this. It's not good enough that we're not in a position where we can really even speculate as to what might happen. We need to know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, on the positive note of this podcast, I do think that he would stick around. And also, I think that Reading, let's say he does want to move on, and there are still plenty of people out there who want to buy football clubs and stuff. Reading can definitely find a better owner, a wealthy whatever. But Reading is still, even going down, Reading is still an attractive proposition on its geography, on the potential size of the fan base, might not be, you know, massive, but you look at a club like Brighton, for example, or something like that. Reading could definitely, if they were to replicate that, they would also feel like a 30,000 seat stadium. And so it's not as if you're playing with a pennies here.
One thing I know that they haven't had the greatest season in terms of results either, but I actually think that it's really positive that the club has invested so much time and money into the women's program and making sure that they're at least competitive, you know, in those leagues. And I think that we see more and more of the women's game every year. You know, it's just in terms of just casual placement of the of, you know, how to watch women's games and stuff like that. You know, more becomes available every year. And so I think that knowingly or not knowingly, Reading have given themselves a little advantage in terms of making themselves an attractive proposition by having the groundwork already done on a successful women's Super League team. So hats off to the club on that. That's a good positive note for today.
For sure. But Alistair's saying, do you think Mark Bowen, Brian Carey and Co will leave if we go down? I don't, because I'm sure after the season, like basically my plan for the end of the season for this podcast is to do an angry show and then a happy show, where we are going to kind of divide up the season review into things that really cheese us off and things that we're happy about. We don't know how long each show is going to be at the moment.
I was just going to ask that.
But I do genuinely think that given the situation, everything, Mark Bowen, et cetera, who have only been here for a year, they are very low down on the list of people that you would blame for this scenario. And yeah, there have been errors in the transfer market, obviously, because then, you know, we're not Man City. But I just don't see a scenario in which they would be leaving. And I mean, obviously, less the ownership or something drastic changes. But generally speaking, you know, Reading for ages have said that we haven't got a long-term plan in place. These are the only blokes that we, or men and women that we have a chance to actually do that with.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. And I would hope, you know, that this, if relegation happens, positive podcast, it's not going to happen. We're staying up. But if relegation was to happen, I would hope that at the minimum that would help Mark Bowen to make his points to Dai Young that, you know, like there are serious changes need to be made. We need to follow through on these changes that I'm attempting to make to the club. You know, otherwise this slide is just going to continue. So yeah, I think they would be staying. Mark Bowen was managing in League One last season. So, you know, I think he knows that. I don't think he has illusions about his level being championship and no lower. So I don't think that he'd be going anywhere. And the people he's brought in, they're fairly recent arrivals, right? So, I mean, hopefully they wouldn't be going anywhere at this point. I'd like to see at least a summer outside of the business plan where we can make moves.
Yeah, DK with the final question this week. He says, if we get relegated to League One, how many years do you think it will be until the team gets promoted back to the Championship? So many variables to be playing with there. Just have a quick look at the League One table and you see that it's the likes of Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth all having good seasons, fighting for promotion. Barnsley as well, Bolton who have bounced back a little bit. Derby probably expected a better season than to be sixth. So those are the teams that Reading would be fighting for promotion for, and, you know, trusting that they would be fighting for promotion. Ultimately, if Reading aren't going to be fighting for promotion in League One, they'll be down with the likes of Shrewsbury, Exeter and Bristol Rovers. Nothing against those guys, but they are simply not as big a clubs as Reading. So you'd have to expect that in the it'd be a couple, 2-3 years of good promotion opportunity. After that, you know, I'm not going to start predicting beyond that, but kind of on the theme of the podcast and just genuinely speaking for myself, I think that I don't think that we'd find it terribly difficult. It might go wrong, obviously. It's football, but put this club in the chat in League One for a season. I mean, we don't make any money in the Championship anyway. Where the, you know, gate receipts will be a bit down, of course. TV money, well, what TV money, quite frankly, in the Championship? And the wage bill will obviously be significantly, significantly lower. And it would, you know, whether in the Championship or League One, Reading will have the chance to rebuild indefinitely better in the Championship. You'll attract a higher caliber of players to rebuild and have a bit more money to do it with. But in League One, at the moment, I think that Reading have a pretty solid base generally speaking, as a football club to do okay in League One?
Yeah, I think I'd say so. I think I compare it to how Wickham have done since they went down a couple of seasons ago. And, you know, obviously a club with fewer resources, taking a few ex-Reading players and putting a squad together there. Wickham have been able to hold themselves, you know, in contention for the playoff places a little more last season than they did this season. But, yeah, I mean, I think that that's another good example of a club that had something of a base that they can build on. You know, we're going to have Naby Sarr next season unless we sell him. Who I think is going to be a very solid operator at that level. We're going to hopefully have Tom Ince again next season, who Tom Ince has caused issues, maybe not creatively, but at least with his running for championship defenses this season. So I'd hope that he'd be able to, you know, really worry some of the teams, especially in the lower end of the League One table. The club has said that they're actively trying to keep Zhao and Meite. Zhao might be difficult if we're not in the championship, obviously. But if we can bring back a few of those, I think that Reading have quality that can definitely do a job in League One. I'd love to see Femi Aziz with a little bit more, you know, license in League One. Not that I'm desperate to see him play in that league, but you get the point there. You know, there's players on this Reading team that are exciting that should be able to operate better. I mean, we're going to have Andy Carroll with a year left on his contract in League One, which, I mean, yeah, he hasn't been he's occasionally been responsible for the tactics getting a little bit stilted, but I mean, he's still a quality footballer, and he should be more than enough for League One. So yeah, I would like to think that, I'm saying two seasons, basically one just to get used to being a winning team again, and then another one to go up.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what sort of manager Reading would get in either situation. I think John O'Shea is supposedly the favourite at the moment, but I'd be surprised if Reading are that far advanced in getting their manager at the moment.
Sorry, Mark, not to cut you. It's an underrated moment in Reading's last few years, I think, John O'Shea leaving. And I think it's worth noting how quickly the defensive performances really fell off after John O'Shea left. So that'll be an interesting pickup for sure.
For sure. Well, let's go into some news bites then, talk about what's happened around the club this week, and then we'll get back into talking about that game against Wigan on Saturday.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Right then, we've got one relegation potentially on the cards at Reading FC this season, and we might have another if we're not careful, because the Reading women's team, it's difficult to describe the 3-2 defeat to Everton at home on the weekend. They were 2-0 up early on, lost 3-2. The second goal from Everton was just from the most awful penalty decision. Kelly James was furious about it, and rightly so. And if you watch back on the highlights, I mean, it's a massive case of the referee over-officiating a game and looking for things that aren't there, which is completely needless. And I mean, the manager's absolutely right to call it out and to say it's been a big issue this season. How much Reading would have got from the game otherwise? I mean, obviously, they were 2-1 up at the time, is a bit TBC, because it's also quite factual to say that Reading have really struggled of late. Only 3 wins from 18. I think 2 of those at least came in the last minute. And 1 point above Leicester they are now, 1 point behind Brighton. Tottenham just about in there as well. Reading play Tottenham in a couple of weeks. So the women's team, it's looking a bit dodgy, that's fair to say. I mean, the problem is in the WSL is that a team like Reading, they play Man City next. Chelsea on the final day, that's almost certainly 0 points. Villa a step above as well with the likes of Rachel Daly, means that that trip to Tottenham is basically the only chance that Reading have to definitely have a chance of getting some points this season, which is a big problem when you've got the likes of, you know, Tottenham play Brighton soon. I know that Brighton have West Ham, which is winnable for them. And then I think on the final day of the season, Brighton play Leicester. So it's really difficult to see Reading getting many more points, and they're going to have to hope that results go their way as well as them hopefully picking up another win. I think certainly 2 wins will do it, but where they get two wins from will be very difficult to see. In terms of the under-21s team, they're in action today as we record this. They were beaten 3-2 by Peterborough. Holzman and Marek scored. Is a bit of a come to and fro game, actually. Reading equalised and then two late goals for Peterborough. The under-18s, they beat Hull on the weekend, 3-2 away from home. They're actually, the Professional Development League isn't looking too bad for the under-18s this year. They've had a good go at it. Obviously, anyone listening to the podcast the last few years knows that the academy teams did suffer in the Premier League divisions in terms of their results, running a fourth in the PDL this year, 4 points behind Millwall. I think time's running out, if not already officially run out, for them to get into the playoffs. But, you know, it's a decent crack from a team, an under-18s and an academy that has been decimated over the last few years. So let's get into the big match preview then, talk about the game home to Wigan on Saturday.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So here we are then, April 29th, Select Car Leasing Stadium at 3 p.m. It's a Saturday kickoff for Wigan at home. And Ross, this is really where we're going to have to do our work for this positive podcast. Maybe being a bit... been our usual analytical selves so far, but this one, there is no losing this game. And Reading staying up, basically. I mean, Reading can draw it and they won't. There's no way, basically, that Reading can mathematically be down on Saturday because Huddersfield play afterwards. They go to Cardiff on the Sunday. So Reading are still in it. It's a fact of the matter that Reading are still very much in it. You ask any neutral observer, they'll look at the fixtures and say they've got a chance without a doubt. If Reading win this game, they will be out of the relegation zone, at least for the day, you know, until potentially Huddersfield beat win at Cardiff or that's it. The things to note before this game, Rotherham play Cardiff on the 27th. I think we're probably looking for maybe Cardiff to win. If Cardiff beat both Rotherham and Huddersfield, that would just, they're done then, and it can mean that we have two more teams to duke it out with. On Friday night, Blackpool at home to Millwall. Obviously, want Millwall to win that one. Blackpool have snuck up on us, as have Wigan. I mean, I was hoping, Ross, that we were going to be playing Wigan with them either with an R next to their name or to give them the R. I guess that is still plausible. If we beat them, they'll be down. But they've got a bit of something to fight for now. And I do wonder, you know, they've won two games on the bounce, but I think it might help us in a way that we can have something to fight for, because they've had the shackles off for the last couple of games, thinking that they can just go and have a chance. And had they been already relegated, then they could take the shackles off then and just have a go. But all of a sudden, it's a little bit close for them now. And you wonder if that might play in Reading's favour a little bit, and for them to actually, you know, suddenly the nerves might just kick in if Reading have a good atmosphere and can start the game well.
Yeah, and honestly, I just think that Reading can't worry at this point about like what's going on with the other teams. The answer is just win with the, you know, with the two games remaining. I think that Wigan could be the moment that, you know, Reading are able to pull out one of these moments that we were talking about earlier. I'd like to see them really try and score quite a few this weekend, if possible. Obviously, it's football. It's easier said than done. But I do agree that with Wigan actually needing to go out and get something, you know, maybe the game will be a bit more stretched. We are playing players who are a little bit more capable of really making use of those transition moments now under Noel Hunt. So, yeah, I think maybe a 4-2 victory or something here with your point about them needing to go for it as well could be in order.
Yeah, there were five of the back team or 3-5-2-1 or 3-4-2-1 sort of deal. Similar-ish to Coventry, which Reading didn't have a great time against. James McLean on the wing, a player that we know a lot about. In terms of how Reading set up, do you go for the 4-4-2 here again, or do you go for a 4-2-3-1 as we were talking earlier? And do you think that it might be time for someone, you know, Kelvin Ian and Mamadi Kamara just to drop back a little bit? I personally wouldn't start Andy Carroll for this game. I'd give Lucas Shaw the freedom, and whether that means playing Shane Long on the wing or something, I'd be kind of fine with. But I probably wouldn't go for a 4-4-2 against a team that is going to have the potential to stretch the game and play in space a little bit as well.
Yeah, no, I'd like to see that 4-2-3-1 as well. And I want to bring up Cassidy playing around Zhao again. I think that that's something that's really let us and let him express himself more in the last couple of weeks. You know, I think that Cassidy is a player that wants to play aggressively, but also with the ball around him in small spaces. And so I think that the 4-2-3-1 will allow him to do that better with Zhao, who I would say is now probably undroppable for the rest of the season.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's do some trivia then. Which Reading have... We've got some really interesting results against Wigan over the years.
Yeah.
However, there was an interesting game not that long ago. What was the scoreline when Wigan last came to Reading?
Ooh. It wasn't a 1-0 Reading game?
It was a 3-0 to Wigan game in 2020.
Oh, that game. Okay, all right.
Has a bit of infamy. I think I'm right in saying this is the Liam Moore game, isn't it?
Yes, I think you're right. Yep.
When he...
Was this Bowen's men very much on the beach maybe back in 2019-20?
Yeah, February 2020, it was a super interesting one for the Reading folklore. You look at that result and think it probably didn't mean much. But yeah, the way that it sent a rocket up the team, basically, from the fans. But I mean, otherwise, Reading have had really good results against Wigan over the years. Obviously beat them 1-0 recently, in September rather.
George Pushkas's hat trick against them is the one that comes to mind first for me.
Yeah, 3-1 in that season, a 3-2 win in March 2019. And other than that 3-0 defeat, not lost to them since 2015, when Jason Pearce scored in a championship game at the Select Carleton Stadium. So Reading have a bit of previous against Wigan. Of course, anyone will remember the 3-2 win. You talk about those moments, that 3-2 win in March 2019, Mo Barra and Yaku Meze scoring very late in the day was very useful for Reading staying up. So I think there's definitely 3 points in this. I mean, how best is it that Reading kind of approach this game? Do you think it is going to be one to keep tight, or do you think, I mean, I think we might well agree on this, that it's just going to be a case of getting out there early and really hitting the front foot and getting the crowd on side and just, you know, attacking and not being too worried if maybe we concede or something like that, because it's a long game. And if Reading get going quickly, scoring that first goal will be so big.
Yeah, no, I think that, like they really haven't been able to do, or at least haven't focused on throughout the season, they need to go out there and just try and score as many goals as they can. Getting up to 3 for one of the few times this season should put this game beyond Wigan, you know, no matter what Reading do at the back. That's a very dangerous thing to say. Obviously, Reading can do a lot of things at the back on a bad day, but I think that getting out there, being positive right away, and trying to score as many goals as possible in the first half has to be the way to go. They can't let, you know, the pressure of the situation get to them as the day goes on. I think I'd like to see them really push forward, and having that 4 at the back, you know, cover it up with the double pivot with McIntyre for sure, now that we've got him back. I definitely wouldn't be reverting to 3 at the back. I'd go 4.
Yeah, I think I'd agree on that. So then just final point then, Where do you think we'll be in the relegation picture after this weekend? I do genuinely think Reading will get a result. I don't know if we're going to win. I don't know if my confidence is that high. But I look at, you know, you look at the teams around, and for Reading to be royally screwed over this week, they basically need Cardiff to beat Rotherham, or, you know, and then Huddersfield to beat Cardiff. They need wins from other teams, basically, in these games. And I, as I said earlier, I think it'd be better if Cardiff won both those games to knock Rotherham and Huddersfield back down. Huddersfield then play Sheffield United in their game in hand about 3 days before, or 4 days before, the final game of the season. If Reading get the win, maybe even a draw to go level with Huddersfield, that means that they have to get something out of the next two games to kind of, you know, make themselves really safe where they're in a position. Because if Reading draw and Huddersfield lose their next two games, they'll be below us on goal difference. So that is so key, I think, in terms of where Reading can stay up. I know that you look at QPR, and yes, QPR are probably safe now with that win. Rotherham as well, you know, teams have 3 games. Rotherham playing Middlesbrough, that might be difficult. Cardiff as well. Someone's got to get points there. And then Rotherham final game of the season play Wigan, who hopefully will be down. Not ideal for Reading. But I do just think that with Huddersfield, that is the team for me that Reading can take hope from, because we get the win, Huddersfield drop points against Cardiff, and then that forces them to go to Sheffield United on that Thursday, knowing that anything but, you know, their own win or potentially a draw, depending on how we do, will mean that they're in the drop zone for the final game of the season. And for all the doom and gloom around Reading, if we're not in the drop zone for the final game of the season, that is huge.
No, just having to defend the status rather than having to go out and try and win it on the road in Huddersfield, I think would be massive. Yeah, so I agree. Let's cheer on Cardiff, I guess, and Sheffield United, I guess, and hopefully drop Huddersfield down to just a little below us. But I'm going to say I do predict the win against Wigan this weekend coming.
What's your scoreline?
4-2, barn burner. Here we go.
Well, I am going to go for a 2-1 Reading win, a bit more nervy perhaps, maybe a 2-0 that turns to 2-1, something I can see. In terms of the prediction, a quick run through that Westie's done very well of late, gone 33 points, he's top of the division ahead of Adam. Adam, myself, Sim and Handbags all said 1-1 against Luton, Ollie said 2-1 against Coventry, so... Sims pulled up level with Ben, who was leading for a lot of the season, level third. Then it's Handbags, and then myself and Ollie level four, the Wooden Spoon. So, well, Ross, it's been a pleasure. I think we've wrangled some positivity out of this podcast.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a difficult job.
Yeah, no, but I think that was a relatively positive conversation. I'm pumped up for Wigan. Let's go, Reading.
Absolutely. Well, positivity is absolutely the word that Reading needs to take into this. I'm sure the fans inside the stadium will be making lots of noise, really getting behind the boys on Saturday. And Reading simply know that they have to win one game against a team that is bottom of the league, and they will probably, hopefully, go into the last game of the season, which could be an absolute, or should be really, an absolute cracker with really good chance of staying in this league. Just got to beat Wigan. That's it. Come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail.